Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. In space, like someone marked by Andrea De Sena. Here's what's up today. Carling Cup. Boys, boys, boys. We salute those teenage gunners. And we reveal the secret of Spurs' success. Available in bottles. There's the Championship. The rum case of Captain Morgan and the sore head. Hull's big bust-up at the Scarborough Opera House. And the latest from both the Liga and Serie A. With Antonio Cassano and the hottest pants in football. There's posts, some shameless plugging, and a mouth-watering preview of all the tasty treats this weekend in the Premier League. All on Football Weekly Extra. Hello all. On board today, Barney Roney.
Hello, James.
Hi, Barney. You've been the subject of some groupie love recently.
Have I?
Haven't you? Didn't you say that people were coming up and quoting entire sections of the podcast?
Well, that's true. It didn't feel like love, though. It felt like something strange.
Was it a harangue?
It was more just an obsessional interest.
Right.
And it wasn't so much in me. It was more the name Glendenning was mentioned a lot.
Ah. It's that Marmite-esque figure that is Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, Barry Glendenning. How are you?
I'm good, yeah.
Right.
I haven't been the subject of any groupie love. I think any sort of, as near as we get to groupies are like sort of teenage boys who are covered in spots. So they're not much use as groupies.
Right.
You did actually have someone come over in our office once and say, are you Barry Glendenning?
I did, yes. And it was a teenage boy.
Were they from the expenses?
I think his skin was quite good. But
right. Well,
just as a matter of interest, I was listening back to Monday's podcast the other day and I noticed there was an ad beforehand, and it wasn't the usual Guinness one. It was for Smooth FM.
Mm.
So now, assuming that was played again today, because we don't know what ad is on before the show starts, no one's listening to this because they've all gone to listen to Smooth FM instead. It's kind of self-defeating advertising.
That accounts for that echoing noise. Yeah. Oh, well. Thanks for that, Barry. Meanwhile, hello, James Starr. You've brought a book along, I hope, have you?
Hey, James. Yes, I have, but more of that later, maybe.
Well, yeah, but what kind of thing is it? What kind of book have you got there, James Starr?
It's a book that I have.
What's it called?
On.
Should we start with that?
It's called The Knowledge, James.
Right.
And it was released.
Like the Guardian website feature where people ask bizarre questions and you just get the most unlikely answers.
Yeah, this is shameless, isn't it? This is good.
Yeah, but tell me, what kind of incredibly mind boggling tidbit have you got in there?
Oh, such hopefully interesting stories as whether or not a player has been shot dead by a referee.
Right. Really?
The Romanian football club that decided that it might use crocodiles to deter. Hooligans.
Right.
And whether or not football's ever started a war. Such a...
Well, that's a bit of an old chestnut, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I tell you what, stick around and tell us a little bit more later on.
It's remarkably Christmas stocking sized.
Can I have a look?
I can't help but notice. The reason Darty edited this book and put it all together was just so he could spite me by not including me in the acknowledgements, even though I made several very valuable contributions.
What were they? Not participating? Was that one of them?
I've worked on The Knowledge, as everyone in the Guardian Sport website.
List of contributors.
Most of them got credited, but I didn't.
There's a very long list of names here.
Yeah. You're probably in there.
There
are work experience people in there.
I noticed I'm not in there either.
Right.
But then again, I don't think I've ever contributed anything to Knowledge.
Good. Now... the Carling Cup, ordinarily I'd class this competition alongside self-abuse and women's monthly visitors and that kind of thing as things not to be discussed in public. But this week it was actually rather exciting. You had Chelsea going out at the hands of Burnley. And above all, you had Arsenal's extraordinary performance by a team with the average age of 19 taking apart a largely full-strength Wigan, 3-0. Barney, eulogies. We always seem to get them around this point, the Carling Cup for Arsenal. Couple of questions. How many of these youngsters are going to make it?
Well, that's the thing. You always have to be slightly sceptical about generations of exciting young kids. But it does look as though certainly three of this generation of Arsenal reservists are probably good enough to play in the first team now.
Let's name the names. Wilshere?
Well, Wilshere is only 16, but he's... you're used to having precocious 16-year-olds who are physically strong. He's precocious in terms of his skills. He's a very skillful player, very good dribbling, passing, vision, very brave as well. But I'd say Vela looks like a wonderful player. He's definitely ready to play in the first team. He's like a young Robbie Fowler.
His goal was astonishingly good.
Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it? And he looks like he's enjoying himself as well. I mean, he's great. He's very quick too. And also Aaron Ramsey, which is great credit to Cardiff and the Championship for for raising him and then giving him to Wenger. But I mean, he also is a fantastic player.
It's fair to point out that they've all made it into the Arsenal first team in recent weeks anyway, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been coming on here and there, but it'd be very surprising if those three don't go on to do very well.
Right, OK. If Wenger was to put out that team, that Arsenal kind of youth team, in the Premier League, where do you think it would finish up? How well would it do?
Well, you imagine they'd be somewhere in the top half. But, you know, teams would work out how to play against them as well. It's always a bit of a shock, isn't it? But if you had 2 weeks to prepare, knowing you'd be up against Kieran Gibbs, who probably isn't ready to play left back, I'm sure you'd probably do something about
it. Steal their lunch money and make them go to bed without any supper.
Well, as you say, I mean, teams have pretty much learnt how to play them in the Premier League as it is, to an extent, so I'm sure they'd be able to do it with their kids as well. But, I mean, they're very exciting. We can pack all the cliches in it, as you do, but... I mean, they've got a bright future, and I think also for England. I mean, it's interesting just to have a few more young English players on the horizon.
I noticed you don't mention Jay Simpson or Oh Jay Simpson, as the Daily Mirror had it. Would you not include him in?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's 19. He had a very good spell on loan at Millwall last year. He's not a typical Arsenal player. He's fast and strong and likes to kind of run onto the ball. But I think he looks very exciting. Can I point out also that Spurs also fielded 5 young English players this week? And I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing for Fabio Capello all round.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a lot of these young players who are being touted as the next big thing, but you never know what's going to happen with regard to injuries. What happens if they start drinking, chasing women, you know, going disco dancing. Just today, there's a young player at Walsall, Ishmael de Montagné, I think his name is. He's been dismissed. He's touted as a really, really promising youngster, but he's just been dismissed after a series of breaches of club discipline. He's been sent off an inordinate amount of times for someone as young as he is. I think he's 19 or 20. And then Everton, they've churned out, you know, next big things over the years. Danny Cadamartri, where is he now? I think Huddersfield Town or somewhere, but his career nosedive. Francis Jeffers, same, but he's had a lot of injury problems.
Wayne
Rooney's doing okay for himself. I think Everton at the moment have a player, Jose Baxter, I think his name is, Jack Rodwell, 2 15-year-olds who are supposed to be hot stuff. But whether or not they'll ever make it, is open to
the big difference, of course, is that Arsene Wenger bases a great deal of his strategy around bringing these players in, and they're often signed at some expense as 16 or 17-year-olds, and that's actually part of his strategy. It's not just something that's happening to the club. And I think these guys will really get a chance at Arsenal.
Interesting. You were also mentioning the player you describe as the most European footballer possible.
Oh, well, just interesting to see Amaury Bischoff coming on, who's 21 years old. He's French-Portuguese, he's played in France, he's played in Germany, he's now playing in England, he's played for France under-18s and Portugal under-21s, and he could qualify for England. It just seems he's the perfect sort of new European
Wenger-style. Synthesis of continental...
Absolutely.
Interesting.
He is all of us.
Somebody probably looked at Andrea Cassano once and said, oh yeah, he's going to be great.
Well, he was. When he was 17, he scored one of the great goals of recent Serie A history against Inter in his first ever game. And he is sometimes still brilliant. He often turns it on for Sampdoria. He is still a great player. But no, he hasn't matched what we thought he was going to do. But that's largely because he's been devoting himself to his other interests, food and sex, as he revealed in his autobiography, I Will Tell You Everything, this week. Perhaps we shall talk more about that later on. Although, frankly, that was the interesting bit. Chelsea going out on penalties after a 1-1 draw. Drogba throwing the coin back. Do we have to mention this, or is it just stupid? And
well, it's worth mentioning. Jamie Carragher got sent off previously for doing the same thing. It's a stupid thing to do, but it's kind of, you can understand why he did it, and he has apologised for it. But then again, if he said it was a heat of the moment thing, but if a spectator did it and said, oh, it was a heat of the moment thing, they'd still be banned from football grounds for
probably forever.
There's a nice kind of symbolism in it, sort of wealth redistribution from the very top. But I don't think Didier, you know, single coin's really going to make that much difference.
Well, indeed.
I think the police are investigating today and the FA, but I mean, come on, I mean, let's get real. I mean, there are more important subjects in London that the Met police could be looking at.
And well,
unfortunately,
indeed.
I think as the news has probably proven this week, that they should be.
Chelsea are quite shocking at penalty shootouts. I mean, that's their fourth in a row, the fifth in a row they've lost. So, you know, it's poor.
Yeah, it is. Barney, you mentioned Spurs. And you had who, of course, continued the Red Net revolution with a 4-2 defeat of Liverpool, who had Fernando Torres back in their side. Barney, bring us this exciting information about the secret of Harry's success.
Oh, well, there's a rumour that it's obviously just a rumour, perhaps. But at the first meeting,
sell it to us. Go on.
First meeting with the, this is from an insider. First meeting with the players, he apparently came in and said, "You boys all look hungry," and slammed a bottle of ketchup down on the table, which he'd prepared and brought with him in his pocket, as a kind of symbolic kind of, hey, you know, the Ramos days are over. We're all eating ketchup now.
Right.
This just is a bottle of ketchup.
Well, I think it was the things that go with the ketchup and the idea of fun.
You're hungry and you have, yeah, you know, this the is the ketchup here. To go. That's why they're playing with relish now, I'm guessing.
This is the same day, though, as Fabio Capello has come out and sort of told said that he's brought in a new regime of not ketchup and chips. Just bringing a more Mediterranean diet to the England players today.
Ketchup's technically a vegetable, isn't it?
One of five a day?
Processed tomatoes.
Well, they've been playing ketchup in the league ever since, and they've now, what? Don't look at me like that, Barry. Well, that's all very interesting. You know, just on the subject of Burnley and all that, the Championship, James Dart, things any clearer there, are they? Wolves still at the top?
Wolves six points clear at the top. That they've just sort of got a bit of depth in their real sort of goal-scoring prowess. When Ebanks-Blake isn't scoring, they've had Michael Keightley coming through. They've also had Iwolumu at the start of the season, so they've had bags of goals. They had a bit of a dip where they had a poor run of about three games or so, and they got thumped by Reading, who were third at home and lost a couple of games. Got thumped at Norwich, I believe. But they've sort of bounced back pretty well. Ebanks-Blake, a few more goals. And last week, they beat Burnley, which was only Burnley's second defeat in 17 games. I mean, Burnley are playing really well. They're up to fifth themselves. So the Burnley visit QPR this weekend in the Championship. But probably the big game would be, I think it's going to be Sheffield United against Reading.
All right, which takes us on nicely to the whole kind of Morgan's elbow thing, which I mentioned. What's the situation with that? Because the FA presumably can't do anything. Can you just A, pre-see the incident, and B, tell us, the FA can't do anything about it now, can they? Because Andy Dorso booked him.
Well, Barnsley have sort of responded this morning, but I'll come back to that in a second. I mean, obviously it was a horrific incident. Ian Hume had a fractured skull from getting on the end of Chris Morgan's elbow.
Right.
During the
Was it deliberate, do you think?
Well, it's a tough one to say.
Morgan is not helped by the fact that he has a lot of previous.
He's got plenty of previous. I mean,
flailing his elbows.
Yeah, I mean, he got a three-match ban for striking Robin van Persie a couple of seasons back. But he's had it in the other way as well. He was punched in the eye by Lee McCulloch in 2006, but just shrugged it off. He said, "Well, look, we're all sportsmen. It's part and parcel of the game." So, for me, I have to say, I thought it was deliberate. And
well, to fracture somebody's skull, I'm guessing, you know, you could have an unfortunate place where you there's a lot of force in that elbow.
Isn't the point here the club is saying that he was saying to the referee, he keeps elbowing me, and the ref didn't intervene as well? I think that's their point.
I think it's interesting, but as today, I mean, and yesterday, I mean, it was imagined that that he was supposedly in the clear, but Barnsley have sort of responded today saying, well, until they submit a match video with the evidence from themselves, then the FA can possibly respond after that. So there's a bit of mileage in this one still to go yet.
But they've also said they're going to back Ian Hume should he take civil action against against Morgan.
Which is always a possibility. But I mean, I think that at the end of it, I mean, hopefully, touch wood, Ian Hume is currently sort of recovering well and after a very poor, very bad couple of days.
Right, indeed. Kakiwi posting and saying, was Morgan's elbow worse than what was delivered to Eduardo? Are your thoughts? I mean, it's a similar kind of thing. Possibly Eduardo was less of a deliberate act, in fact. Very probably, in fact.
You don't tackle with your elbow.
No, that's true. I tell you what else we wanted to talk about from the Championship. Andy Cole.
Andrew Outstanding Cole.
Yeah.
Yes,
Nottingham Forest all the way down in the second last place, and he's decided to hang up his boots. He scored a lot, if you know what I mean.
Well, he was sharp like a razor. Speed to amaze you.
Are you by any chance quoting from his...
outstanding
discography.
Oh, it's just those kind of words that get stuck in your head, aren't they?
he was, I think, as you said. I mean, he's one of the. He was. I mean, you have to appreciate and recognise he had a fantastic goal scoring record through his career. He was also one of the more sullen and taking himself very seriously footballers in the game, and he also recorded arguably one of the worst music singles in history.
I mean, it's a weird one because he always seemed to be terminally dissatisfied with his lot in life, and he didn't have much to complain about, to be fair. Just as general occupations go, and he was very good at his job, you know. But I don't think he's going to be any huge loss to the game, you know.
No. He's a good player. I mean, he's the second highest ever Premier League scorer, which obviously is only going back 15 years or so. But
you're worried the whole generation is passing and there's no... You don't see who's coming up to replace them.
Well, I was just looking at the list. That's all the top 10 all-time scorers in the new top tier. Only Michael Owen is still hanging around. The rest of them have all gone. And Dion Dublin there at number 11. And you wonder, is anyone really scoring a lot of goals at the moment outside of Lampard and Gerrard?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. How long is he going to be around for?
Yakubu.
But you see, that was back in the days when strikers scoring goals was fashionable. And these days, non-scoring strikers are all the rage.
Yeah. Yeah. And scoring non-strikers.
Yes.
Hmm. There you go. That's football evolving. Good thing we're across that. Very good. I think that's probably enough of all that. And time for a bit of this.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Hello, Sid.
Hello, James.
Hello, Sid Lowe. Are you having breakfast with Real Madrid? Am I right?
Well, I've actually finished my breakfast with Real Madrid now. They have a kind of a breakfast with a member of the, if you like, the institutional staff every so often. Today it was a breakfast with the chief of the scouting network and the chief of who's essentially the head of football at Real Madrid. But that breakfast is now finished. And we're all waiting for Real Madrid to come and train. But I'm looking at Real Madrid's beautiful green football pitch right now.
Barry has a question.
Sid, just in light of something we were discussing before you came on the line, was there ketchup on the table in the Real Madrid canteen?
No, there wasn't. Is there a reason? Barry, I should add, it was breakfast, not lunch.
Right.
You don't have ketchup for breakfast?
Yeah.
Certainly the Spaniards think the English are very, very strange with things like bacon and eggs for breakfast. It was just very much a patisserie kind of event.
Well, it wasn't us who went out 4-3 to a third division team, Real Union, midweek in the Copa del Rey.
Yeah,
like Real Madrid did.
Yes, like Real Madrid did. A massive, massive result. I think what Real Madrid are, you know, right now, I mean, for example, sitting here, it's 2 hours late. Real Madrid haven't come out to training. You look out across the training pitch and everyone's thinking, hang on, something very funny is going on here. Lots of, obviously, rumours that Bernd Schuster could be about to get the sack. I get the feeling the entire team is down in the dressing room with Schuster now tearing strips off each other. And the thing about Real Madrid is, because of the institutional situation at the club, the fact that there's real tension between, for example, the guy we were having breakfast with this morning and Pedro Agmijatovic, there's tension between the president and others. And all live on air, I think Real Madrid are actually just about to turn out and start training 2 hours late. Everyone's getting very excited here. We're all running to the window. Shall I run to the window for you?
Yeah, do.
I'm running to the window. In fact, there is Real Madrid out on the training pitch, and I'm not exaggerating when I tell you they are 2.25 hours late.
Right.
So something has been going on in the dressing room.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you, is burnt toast, continuing our...
Breakfast chat.
breakfast motif.
I like that. It's very good, is burnt toast. It's substantially better than Sean's streaky bacon remark.
Actually, which made it onto the Football 365 Media Watch website. I
certainly did, with rather...
Very good. I must say, actually, is burnt toast... I can't tell you if burnt is toast or even if...
Is he there training with the... Is he?
Well, that's exactly why I can't tell you. He's not out there. The team's coming out now. Jerzy Dudek, last one, strolling out at the moment. Bernd Schuster's number... In fact, no, he's not the last one out. Surprise, surprise. Guti's the last one out. He's not out there at all. His staff are all out there, but at the moment, Schuster isn't.
Mm, interesting. Is that in the air then, Sid? Follow. Is it this Copa del Rey or what? Because you know they're flying high in the league and that. But
yeah,
it's just
the thing is, this is a crisis that most clubs would love. Of course, you know Real Madrid will almost certainly get through. Oh, here comes Schuster now. So he is out there. He goes.
Is he carrying any bags? Anything like that? A large cardboard box?
I think there's a couple of bags under his eyes, but I don't think he's carrying any bags. Real Madrid, you know, so this is a crisis that a lot of clubs would love to have. They're only 2 points off the top in the league. They're definitely going to get through to the next stage of the Champions League unless something really terrible happens. But, of course, Real Madrid aren't like other clubs, and the amount of pressure that's on them and that it's about how they play as well as the results they get. And all season, in truth, they haven't played that well. They've continued to get results because they're very good players and they seem to get away with it. They have an ability to score goals without playing particularly well. But but they have tended to get results. Now, the thing is, I was saying before, the institution in Madrid is such a mess. There's so much pressure on him. So many people out to get the president, and he's paranoid, but it doesn't mean they're not out to get him. They really are out to get him. There's so many people against Schuster. There's so much division within the club and within the kind of the entourage that surrounds the club. But they've always been only a couple of bad results away from a crisis, and now that's what everyone's calling this.
Listen, Christian FM 4, our pal from Vienna. Barry, remember Christian? No. Hello to you, Christian FM4.
I'm surprised you remember him, given how drunk you were the night you met him.
I wasn't drunk, Barry.
Yes, you were.
I was just filled with bonhomie.
All right.
Yeah, high on life.
It's bonhomie. What's that, 40%?
Come. Now, anyway, Christian FM4 says that he's been listening to rival broadcast media, and they've been expounding this theory that basically Bernd Schuster won the title last year, largely on the back of foundations that Don Fabio Capello had built, and this year Schuster's tactical limitations have been exposed. Is that true?
That is true up to a point, yes. I think there are certain factors that certainly lead you that way. I mean, you look at what Real Madrid did when they first won the title with Fabio Capello. There was a degree of togetherness that hadn't been before. There was a defensive solidity that perhaps hadn't been there before. Although I don't want to exaggerate the defensive solidity, because in Capello's title, Madrid kept on doing these incredible comebacks when actually defensively they hadn't always been that strong. But there was a toughness about them. There was a resilience about them that carried on a bit into last year. Bernd Schuster, I always think, is one of the big myths of Spanish football. Everyone talks about what a creative coach he was and how he's going to make Real Madrid brilliant. And as Calderon said when he signed him, it wasn't just about winning things, it was about the pursuit of excellence. Well, in truth, Real Madrid had four or five very, very good games last season, maybe even four or five excellent games. But they weren't an excellent side in the creative sense, in the talent sense. And they did win the league to some extent as an extension of Capello. But I think it would be harsh to suggest that Schuster didn't improve them. They certainly scored a lot more goals last year under Schuster.
There's one final thing, Sid. Bala77 says, could you ask, or 77 or something, could you ask Sid Lowe to elaborate on the story surrounding Ruben de la Red and how he is apparently the victim of some form of occult practice?
Some sort of what practice?
Occult is the word that James is struggling to come to grips with.
It's involving macrobiotic yoga or something.
Black magic and such I think voodoo.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure if I can elaborate on that.
Do you know about this or not?
Ruben, well, I think I can guess what this poster is getting at. And I think this poster has, I'm sorry to say, hideously mistranslated a headline from Spanish. Real Madrid have been accused of hiding the details of the test that have been done on Ruben de la Red after he fainted a few weeks ago. In fact, it's 2 weeks ago, isn't it now, in the first leg of the Copa del Rey. Mm. They have been accused of hiding the results, of not being clear about it, of not telling people. And this comes from a series of things recently. The new Real Madrid's medical services have been put out to tender, and there's an accusation that the medical staff now are no longer informing journalists. For example, there used to be a form up on the board after every training session telling you what was wrong with each player who was injured or had a knock or whatever it was. That doesn't happen anymore, and Ruben de la Red is the latest case, and it's happened with Ruud van Nistelrooy. He's gone to the States for an operation on his knee. We don't know anything. No one's saying anything about it. No one's saying anything about the test run on Ruben de la Red. They say accused of hiding it. Now, Spanish for hiding is ocultar. So Real Madrid have been accused of ocultismo, in hiding this information, deliberately not putting out this information to the press. So I suspect that these occult things that are going on around Ruben de la Red, that's probably what it refers to.
Sid, magnificent. Thanks for clearing that one up, Doctor. We look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
I'll see you then. Cheers.
Many thanks to Sid Lowe for that. And on other Hispanic-related news, Maradona, Argentine media asking, has he resigned already? Yesterday, after apparently there's a big bust-up between him and the head of the Argentine FA, Grondona, because he wants to bring in Oscar Ruggeri, who called Grondona a mafioso. Grondona then says, I don't like his face, it's a personal thing. So,
well, you can sort of see where he's coming from, no?
Well, indeed, and Maradona meant to be sitting on a bench, presumably where? Hampden Park next week when Scotland host Argentina. So, we wait with bated breath.
Speaking of vacancies, job vacancies, I've been busy filling out my application, and I presume you have too, in today's papers, the FA chief executive position.
All right. What kind of job requirements do they list there?
Well, it is unlikely that anyone with a track record, without a track record of running a substantial business or organization, will have the necessary experience to take on this role. But there is a significant six-figure salary plus bonus and benefits, which I presume is your own secretary and whatnot.
Buffet.
But yeah, they appear to be looking for someone competent, and assuming they usually do.
It's a bit of a change of tradition.
Yeah, it'll never work.
Yeah. This is obviously to replace Brian Barwick.
Well, indeed. Mm. And he'll take some replacing. Big shoes to fill, those ones. Tell you what, while we wait for the exciting developments that no doubt are in store on that front, let's have a quick nod to Syria. We mentioned Adjoa Cassano, whose new book is out. He claims 700 women he's had sex with, which I think is a bit of a surprise. 20 of them from the world of showbiz. Famously, I don't know if anyone knows who Michelle Hunziker is, who used to be the squeeze of Eros Ramazzotti. And Cassano stunned the showbiz world by when she was presenting the Sanremo Music Festival. Italian listeners will know what I'm talking about here. He basically delivered an entire room's worth of red roses to her, and you know,
presumably it worked.
I don't think that she counts on that 700.
Oh,
but sadly.
It's conceivable. I mean, how old is he? 26, something like that.
Is he that old now?
He's been around a while. Mm. See, think, I 10 years, 700 over 10 years.
I wonder about these guys who make these claims. Like Gene Simmons from Kiss claims, what is it, 5,000, and he has Polaroids of them all. Surely, God, you're going to lose count after about 30.
Well, that's why the Polaroid is a very good idea, isn't it?
Indeed. That's where you and I went wrong, Barry.
Yeah, it must be.
But anyway, and you point out, Barney, that Cassano is a man who loves stripping down to his underpants.
It's the enduring image, isn't it? Yeah. Ripping his clothes off as he scores in the Rome derby.
Mm.
But no, it's interesting that the quote's coming out of the book this week. So, I mean, there might be some. I mean, he said to Fabio Capello, "You are a worthless man. You're as fake as Monopoly money."
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. And that he football saved me from being a criminal. I've never worked a day in my life because I don't know how to do anything.
Right.
So, yeah, him and Winston Bogart could have been two criminals.
I have to say that Antonio Cassano also holds the famous distinction of having bought me lunch once when he was a... You know,
Did he get you into bed?
he didn't, you know where that normally leads to.
Football and... sex and food, he claims in this book, are his two great passions. So I came on the
like
right
you
side
would,
of that device.
Yeah,
indeed. Lucky to get away with lunch.
But if he bought you an ice cream, it could have been a different story.
Well, indeed. He was a difficult teenager. This was back in his days of scoring wonder goals against Inter.
It wasn't the only scoring he was doing.
Exactly, Barry, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, what else? Oh, in Italy today, Juve, who won the last six, will be hosting Genoa, who feature the exciting talents of Diego Milito, the Argentine wonder man, who was at Genoa until they got sent down to the third division for match fixing and has now come back and is banging them in. So that'll be an interesting game as Juve continue their assault on the top of the league in Italy. In the meantime... their old general manager Luciano Moggi back in the news. We've had people asking recently whether there was any chance of him coming back to Juve. The Italian prosecutor who's basically continuing the civil side, not the FA side of the whole kind of scandal, Calciopoli scandal, has asked for, what are you shaking your head for, Barney?
I'm just pondering Italian football. Mm. That's all. I'm just pondering the many machinations and inquiries.
Well, anyway, he wants him to go to jail for 6 years. Moggi's 71 years old, so I think it's extremely unlikely that this will happen. But everyone was a bit shocked at what the prosecutor asked for. 6 years for him, five for his son, and 16 months for Italy's World Cup winning manager, Marcello Lippi's son, Davide. The charge being that they used basically threatened violence to make players sign up for their management agency and sign for specific clubs so that Moggi's Juve side in the early part of the decade could prosper. Kind of sample thing. They would maybe put in, say, 11 of the kind of starting 13 at Siena would be Moggi-controlled players, and Siena would therefore concede three goals in the first 10 minutes of their game against Juve, who would then romp to the title. Yes. So anyway, that'll be interesting to see how that one goes. And Robe Derby this weekend? Very, very interesting, that one. Both times last season, it ended 3-2 to the home side. And for the first time in ages, though, Lazio actually way ahead of Roma coming into this one because they're way up at the top. Thanks to the goals of Mauro Zarate, former Birmingham starlet. Scored 7 goals so far. Roma, meanwhile, in absolutely shocking form. Just 1 point off the relegation zone. So it'll be interesting to see how that will go. Roma will probably win, given the curious, illogical nature of the derby. There you go. A little stingette, and then let's look forward to the weekend, shall we? one or two posts. Hitses Lee says, is the Paul Doyle who is 11th in the Football Weekly Fantasy Football League the Paul Doyle? Yeah, it is.
I think so, yeah.
Worryingly, yeah. If you fancy joining in, even if you haven't put a team together yet, Sean Ingle urges me to point out that there's a monthly prize of, I think, of a grand for the best performing team. So even if you're not in since the start, you're still, you know, in with a chance of winning that. Where are Glendening, Honigstein or Richardson? Somewhere further down the list, I think.
I didn't enter a team.
Did you not?
I just find fantasy football really boring.
All right, I don't. I think it's great, but my team aren't doing very well. Can the pod members all nominate the three teams to get relegated from the Premier League this year?
I would say Newcastle, West Ham, and I'm getting increasingly concerned that Sunderland will be one of them.
Mm. James?
I'd second West Ham and Sunderland, and yeah, West Brom, sorry.
Right.
West Ham, West Brom and Bolton.
Really? Interesting. Mm. Lots of talk on the post about the best game ever. Van Ant, however, says he feels obliged to turn the best game ever debate on its head and instigate the most dire game the world has ever witnessed. He mentions, where was it? The 1991 European Cup final, Red Star Belgrade, god-awful draw against Marseille. Anybody else got any nominations there?
Ireland and Egypt played out a pretty poor World Cup finals match. I can't remember which one. Mm. Italia 90 must have been. That was shocking. Absolutely shocking.
I think someone mentioned on the post the extraordinary Germany Austria Anschluss one, where Austria rolled over for their German neighbours and etc. etc. And on a similar note, there was a Rome derby, which supposedly is the most passionate, fiercest rivalry, etc. 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 And a couple of years ago, there was one in which both teams were threatened with relegation, which we kind of hyped up. You know, this could be make or break for both teams. And as they ran out, Paolo Di Canio, who was playing for Lazio at the time, went over to Antonio Cassano, who was playing for Roma at the time, and cupping his mouth with his hand so that no one could lip read, he had a bit of a word in Cassano's shell light. Cassano nodded, and the two teams proceeded to kick the ball around between themselves for about 90 minutes, and it finished 0-0. And I have to say, the fans were absolutely furious at this, and there was a major set to it, especially because Di Canio was always one of those players who said, oh no, you know, I am ultra, you know, and they were, the personal pride and all this, it just flew in the face of his entire kind of ultra image. Anyway, there you go, that would be my nomination, Barney.
Well, I don't really
have to nominate.
Well, I don't really go along with games being boring because they don't have many goals, and that's one of the reasons I like football. Is that you get a boring 90 minutes here and there. So,
okay.
Although anything with Chelsea and Liverpool from the Champions League over the last 3 or 4 years, probably a
can't argue with that.
Okay, Asian Cup.
Playing each other. Sorry.
Right. Osaka Ben 83 points out that Hooray Gamba Osaka won the Asian Cup with a 2-0 victory in Adelaide. They'll probably be facing Adelaide next month in the quarterfinal of the Club World Cup. Nice one, Osaka Ben 83. Thanks for that. Good knowledge. Oh, speaking of which, James Dart.
Seamless.
Yeah, what were you were saying about a club shooting? Do tell.
There was. There have been a couple of instances in the past where, or reports at least, of referees shooting footballers dead in self-defense.
Right.
The first one sort of involved was involved in South Africa. I can go through this for you, involving the Heartbeats, Fontaine Wallabies and Try Agains. And according to police, when Try Agains scored to go 2-1, to cut their deficit to 2-1 down, fans ran onto the field to protest. There were reports of heavy unlicensed betting on this game at the time. And the Wallabies captain, Isaac Mukwetha, left the field to get a knife, and while the referee went to get a pistol from the crowd. And while he went with the knife, the ref shot him.
You're kidding.
Mm. And apparently in July 2004, another instance in Kenton-on-Sea in Eastern Cape, where the coach was shot dead as well. So, yeah, fun and... not really fun.
Crocodiles to keep the fans at bay. That's another...
There was, in 2003, there was a Romanian 4th Division side called Stoia Nicolae Balcescu, apparently, who were being threatened with expulsion from the league due to regular crowd interlopers on the field. So the chairman, Alexandra Kringus, came up with the concept of bringing in a crocodile hooligan deterrent, building a moat around the pitch.
Surprised Ken Bates didn't think of it first, to be honest.
It's what they've got in the Maracanã. They've got a moat around the pitch, which is the same idea.
I quite like.
No crocodiles, sadly, though. No.
I really like this idea. Element. I really like this idea. And they were even going to keep the water warm so that the crocodiles would be able to treat them well.
So they actually genuinely put a crocodile in there?
Well, the last we heard that the authorities were considering the club's proposals. So if anyone does actually know, beyond
Jonathan
this,
Wilson knows, I bet.
Probably will.
Just confirm for me that this is from the book The Knowledge, compiled from the strangest and most curious stories from The Guardian Guardian's award-winning, or at least it should be, feature.
Multi-award nominated. Right. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride feature.
So the knowledge.
No, it's our weekly column that we've been running for 8 years or so on
right.
the site.
So I bet it's a good... And just confirm also for me, is Christmas coming up? Is that right? Later on next month?
Yeah, some people have said it could be a decent stocking filler, I hear. So.
Right, okay, interesting.
So, yes, available at all good
It's a nice festive colour as well, isn't it? It's very Christmassy.
Nice and green with a picture of a brain on the front. Yeah, just with the kind of festive image you sort of conjure when you think of these things. So, yes, available at guardian.co.uk bookshop and all other good bookshops and plenty of other less good ones as well, I suspect.
Oh, a nice one. Well, that's more good news then. In the rather more immediate future, of course, the weekend in the Premier League, and as is traditional, we finish off today with a bit of a look forward to what awaits us on the weekend. We'll try and make it interesting this weekend, because I know that one or two of you have had issues with us not making it interesting, so we'll try and keep the interest.
I've already losing interest.
All right, well then, Barry, let me. I'll start with Hull and Man City, because there's so much to talk about here. I mean, there's the fact that on football terms, City are rubbish on the road, and you know, you like to talk about the fact that they don't fancy it, do they? Because those,
well,
Rubinho and all that. But
I mentioned that one specific, or a couple of specific Manchester City players didn't fancy a game of Middlesbrough. Within hours, I've been accused of xenophobia and racism on
the
blog.
I think just lazy
journalism.
I was
not talking about all footballers. I mentioned two specific footballers.
Right. Okay, well, in the meantime, all sorts of unrest at Man City. You've got Elano coming out and publicly saying that he doesn't think much of Mark Hughes' management, and you feel that one of the two is likely to go, but say that sources in Abu Dhabi, it's likely to be Elano, because, Barney?
Well, the Sheikh, of course, Sheikh Mansour bin Zayed Al Nahyan, is very happy with Mark Hughes. They met for the first time this week.
Mm-hmm.
Hughes flew out to Abu Dhabi, and the Sheikh says... He says, Mark shared with me his plans for how the team should be developed. His strategy is compelling.
Mm.
And there were pictures of Mark Hughes going through customs with a small attaché case, which presumably contained his plan, which was compelling.
Maybe it contained several bottles of YR sauce.
You wonder what was in there.
Some Heinz ketchup.
Or just a piece of paper with 11 Brazilians written down on it, or a picture of the Sheikh lifting the Champions League up.
You mentioned Elano, but there's talk of Rubinho and Joe also being unhappy with Hughes. And if it comes down to Rubinho versus Hughes, I don't think
anyone's saying Rubinho's unhappy yet, are they? Joe is certainly unhappy, but there's sort of, you know, people are lumping him in with the other Brazilians. I mean, so far he seems fine, actually.
They're certainly happy at Hull, aren't they?
They're delighted, yes. They had a team-building exercise during the week. They all went for
Why do these things always happen on team-building?
A night out at the casino and in a 3 a.m. kerfuffle.
Yeah, now, the casino's called the Scarborough Opera House.
This was the first big shock of the story, that Scarborough has an opera house, or had at one point, which is now a casino. So they're in the Scarborough Opera House casino, and Marilyn King and Dean
Windass
had a big... set to. King headbutted Windass in the face and knocked over a table of drinks. I'm not sure what they were rowing about.
I thought it was all reported as being over Marlon King's missing watch. Did Marlon King not?
Well, no.
That's to come. That's still to come.
Oh, really?
To come. Oh. Yes. So I think I got the impression from the story that Windass had said something about one of King's friends. Or his boys, inverted commas, so a friend or a son or whatever.
He's friends with boys.
Well, right. And they had this big Barney, and then they were separated.
That was Barney Roney who said that, because he's got form.
It was Marlon King, he said, yeah.
And then Marlon King claimed that his £19,000 watch, now who needs a £19,000 timepiece, I don't know, to go to a casino in Scarborough, possibly because the casino doesn't have clocks on the wall,
true.
So you need to know what time it is. He claimed his watch had been stolen, when in fact a casino staff had seen him take it off his wrist and put it in his own pocket, where it was later found. So, all sorts of disharmony at all.
Marlon King has a £19,000 watch?
Yes, he does.
Marvellous.
Yeah, he's got form, hasn't he, Barney? Tell us.
Well, it's widely known that he was in prison for 5 months for handling a stolen car.
Right. Really? I tell you what else is shocking, and this probably isn't as widely known, he went to Producer Pete's school. Were you in the same class or anything, Producer Pete? He's about 5 years younger than Producer Pete. Okay, well, there you go. Hull have had a bit of a rubbish period, of course. They've been playing some decent teams. And who was it, Bolton last weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they're sort of the early sort of... shocking run has definitely come to a stuttering stop at the time being. They need to bounce back quickly and get some.
Will they against Man City, James?
I think they will, yeah. I think City are so abject at the moment away from home that they can add to the pressure on Hughes this weekend.
Right. Now, also this weekend, Arsenal are hosting the team that was supposed to be challenging them for fourth place, Aston Villa, who've had rubbish results in the last two.
Well, this is a funny one because it depends on which Arsenal turns up, depends on which Villa turns up. You know, would bad Arsenal beat good Villa? Would, you know, good Arsenal will almost certainly beat either Villa, but there are so many possible permutations of which sides could actually turn up on the field to play that it's a hard one to call.
I think, I think Arsenal will be quite glad. I think Carew's not playing and he's a big, tall man who can head the ball, so it's probably some relief.
Is he not?
I think he's got some hip problems.
Yeah, okay.
So he won't be terrorising Carew.
Has he had too much pressure on his lap or something? Is that...
I don't know.
It's the kind of thing you might pick up in a bar, right, isn't it, really?
While swinging around a metal pole.
Now, you'll put West Ham among your three to go down at the end of the season. I noticed that he's one of the many clubs mentioned by Keith Harris as going to be up for sale very, very soon. With Portsmouth and Liverpool and who else?
Everton and Newcastle. Yeah. He's selling them all as a job lot off the back of a van, I think. I'm curious to know what Steve Clark's input has been at West Ham because, you know, one of the first things Zola did when he took over the job was poach Clark from Chelsea.
At vast expense, though.
At vast expense, and Clark was very successful at Chelsea. Chelsea haven't been noticeably poorer since he left. They have lost a couple of games, but West Ham certainly haven't been any better since he arrived there.
It's quite hard to pin it all on Steve Clark. Poor old Steve Clark. Financial turmoil, massive injury list, new manager who's got no experience. It's Steve Clark.
No Steve Clark bounce at all since they've come to West Ham.
No, I'm not trying to blame all West Ham's woes on Steve Clark, but, you know, he's in charge of training the first team and he's not doing it very well at the moment.
I think the problems for West Ham are going to come in January, aren't they, where they basically have to sell
a fire sale. Yes. Mm. One point in six, is it now, for Gianfranco Zola? Vancouver Ram might be 1.5. But anyway, Vancouver Ram says, Zola is becoming, good shout, this is the new Ardiles, a diminutive and beloved foreigner who sends his teams out to play attractive football and then watches them plummet to the bottom of the league.
He looks incredibly sad as well, doesn't he? Terrible look of misery. You want to give him a big cuddle. He kind of looks like a wounded Ewok.
There is that, but at the same time, I think hasn't really come out really angry in terms of in any of the media interviews after any of the games.
He's feeling very melancholy and sad.
It's true, but you almost want to see a bit more. I don't know if West Ham fans want to see a bit more sort of passion in that respect when he comes out.
But he has said in interviews that he's genuinely surprised at how difficult managing is.
He should have given it a go.
He may have bitten off more than he could chew.
Well, indeed. They're facing Portsmouth anyway. The Tony Adams revolution continues. Met God joining, etc. Blackburn taking on Sunderland. They've just played each other in the Carling Cup. Blackburn had a win.
Yes.
Yeah.
And will probably win again the weekend. Sunderland are playing very, very poorly.
Yeah, you're concerned, aren't you, Barry?
I'm very concerned.
Well, what exactly concerns you in particular?
Well, I'm concerned by the fact that Roy Keane has said that he's very concerned.
Right.
So he knows more about what's going on there than I do. But fair. He doesn't seem to be... They're not scoring any goals.
Right. Kenyon Jones, though, is now back. That's a good
yes,
news.
Yes, but I don't think Kenyon Jones is going to score enough goals to keep them up. And they need someone else to score goals.
Okay. What are the odds on Bolton putting a bit of a dent into Liverpool's run at the
top? It's a very big game for Liverpool, isn't it? I mean, they had their little wobble and they won last week, and this is exactly the kind of game that Benitez needs his team to win. And of course, Sammy Lee returning to Bolton,
with a
point to prove.
Yeah. Fulham, meanwhile, will be hosting Tottenham. Fulham actually have a very good record at home, 4 wins in 6, which is a bit of a surprise because I thought they'd basically been losing every game possible. But
I've seen Fulham play once this year at Craven Cottage against Sunderland, and they were very poor and looked toothless up front. So, their results would suggest that was an aberration, and they're not always that bad.
They've got some decent. I think Zamora and Johnson isn't a bad partnership. Actually, I think they look quite decent.
Now that Johnson's got his 100th goal in the Premier League, he seems to have sort of a little bit reborn in the last couple of weeks. So, if they can get him on a good scoring run, that he could be able to provide the goals to keep them
Fulham
up.
Fulham have a very good manager as well. I think he's very underrated, and I think he'll do very well.
Oh, well, that's nice. And but although he's facing Harry Redknapp and his sauce-powered Spurs.
It's a funny thing about Harry Redknapp, isn't he? Yeah. You keep hearing that he tells the players they're really good. Everybody is telling them how good they are. And you wonder how long that can keep working. If he tells you you're really good 100 times, does it still work? Or is there a diminishing...
Or if he told me, say, that I was really good, would I be really good?
Well,
maybe
you would.
Yeah. I have my doubts.
No, you are really good, Barry, you are. That is the Premier League weekend. And I tell you what, that was pretty interesting, wasn't it? That little preview. better than normal, and it will be when producer Pete has chopped half of it out. So just think, listeners, if you'd heard the full version. Anyway, now, thank you, producer Pete. Many, many thanks, James Dart, and to Barney Roney for joining us today. And that's about it.
No acknowledgement for me, again.
Guardian policy.
One snub after another.
Nice one. We'll be back on Monday, and hopefully you'll be joining us then. Bye-bye.